stuff like this.
We need to get started. I wondered if the we wanted to welcome the Minnesota Zoo for Minnesota Zoo Day. It's wonderful to have the animals here, and I know we're being televised. I'm not sure if people who are watching can see the animals or not. But you can feel free to stick around for a couple more minutes if you'd like, because other committee members are coming in. But we probably need to get going with our business of the day as well. So we want to thank you. We have an armadillo, a chinchilla, a great horned owl, and what would you introduce?
Solomon Island skink.
Solomon Island skink. And they're very nice animals, extremely well-behaved. They fit in very well at the Capitol, and we were curious what the armadillo would do if you put him down. He was suggesting it might not be good for the table, but it'd really be fun to see him run down it. Sure. Do I have to grab him at the other end?
Okay. You know, like rolling down there.
Just roll. Okay, this is going to be fun.
And would you like it close to you?
Sure.
But I can get out of the way. All right, we'll see what he looks like when he opens up the shell.
So what I'll do is...
you want some help?
Sure, thank you.
All right.
Didn't know you were going to get to be a zookeeper today.
Oh, this is fun.
All right.
Okay, let's see what he looks like.
Oh, so cute.
Cool. Okay. He doesn't let a lot of his tummy show.
No, the tummy is the one spot that's not protected, so you're going to notice she's going to stay hunched over to protect that and kind of not give up her weakness. And they don't typically move very quickly, as you can see. When she gets going, sometimes it's interesting. The front feet, the claws, kind of keep her up on her tippy toes. So they're once they get going, they're much like a ballerina.
How old is it?
She is about 8 years old, and this is a female. And she's one of our many education animals that come to events like this, come to schools throughout Minnesota, libraries throughout Minnesota, community events, and also serves a lot of people that come to the zoo and education programs there as well.
Can hear her making a little squeaky noise.
Yep. And then when you go to pick her up, she curls back again to get into that more protective posture.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks for
the
opportunity.
Yeah, you do. Right. Yes, that's right.
Tell
let her be in charge.
Great horned owl.
Well, I was just going to say, you're lucky. Get the television. We'll have a critter to train them right here.
All right.
Yeah.
We're gonna have to start the committee business. Thank you again so much for being here. We really enjoyed the demonstration. And anyone else can go visit the zoo animals in the rotunda for the afternoon. You'll be there what time?
1:30
until for a couple of hours? Or okay, excellent. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. We better bring Senator Sparks up for his bill. We've got, is Senator Sparks still here?
Yep.
Yeah, we'll start with him. And, yeah, you could have some, you know, background noise if you like. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. That's kind of fun to be able to see the animals. And we appreciate the opportunity to be here in front of you, Madam Chair, with Senate File 364. It's a carryover bill from last session. It was heard in Environmental Policy and also in the Ag Committee, and it passed both of those committees. We do have an A1 amendment that we'll pass around, and we can discuss that a little bit more, Madam Chair. But as many of you know, the Stakeholder Drainage Work Group has been meeting since 2006 for the following purposes: to foster science-based mutual understandings regarding draining topics and its issues, and to develop consensus recommendations for drainage system management and related water management, including recommendations for updating drainage law and other provisions. And I know that you have a long agenda, Madam Chair, so I'd like to turn it over to Al Kane with the Board of Water and Soil Resources to discuss the bill and mainly the amendment that's before you today.
All right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Al Kane. I serve as Chief Engineer for the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and I also serve as the facilitator for the Stakeholder Drainage Work Group. In your packet, there should be two documents explaining the drainage work group, One's a fact sheet, identifies all the different members, different groups who are represented on the stakeholder drainage work group, and some of the work that has been done and accomplished by the work group in the past several years. Another document in your packet is a drainage work group 2008-2009 consensus recommendations. And this is a compilation of all of the recommendations which are covered in the bill. And along the right side there, you'll see some explanation of those proposed revisions to drainage law and other topics that's included in the bill. So I just draw that to your attention. I will give a very brief overview of what is in the bill. Some of you have were exposed to this last year when the bill first was introduced, but just a very brief overview. Within drainage law, there are a number of different provisions related to modifications to drainage systems. One of those is 103E227, which is the impoundment and diversion. And within this section, one of the key recommendations that the work group is making is to add a provision for rerouting of a public drainage system. For different types of impoundment projects, such as wetland restorations, oftentimes a drainage system needs to be rerouted around the restoration, if you will. And that wasn't something that was envisioned, if you will, in the original drafting of that section. We've also made recommendations for improving the ability of 227 to foster partnerships between drainage systems and conservation programs and individual landowners. So you'll see that included in there as well. There's a number of other clarifications within 227, but I think those are the key ones that we're trying to propose. Another key piece of drainage law, 103E805, currently is in regard to removal or partial abandonment of a public drainage system. Again, whenever projects such as impoundments and wetland restorations are incorporated into a drainage system, there may be a need to remove or to partially abandon a piece of the system. And this section of law currently includes two functions, the removal function and the partial abandonment function. And the way it's written has created some confusion, if you will, with drainage authorities and others who are petitioners to use this section. What the drainage work group is recommending is to separate those two functions into current 805 and a new 103E806 section so that the two functions can be separated and the process for using those functions can be clarified. Again, a clarification, not a change of criteria. The criteria upon which those two sections are used remains the same as it was. 103E065, drainage inspectors, a clarification there just to indicate that it applies to all public drainage systems. There isn't a threshold in the recommendation then based on money, if you will. And it clarifies that it applies to both counties and watershed districts who are drainage authorities under Chapter 103E. The remainder pieces there in regard to money. If you recall, I believe it was 2 years ago, there was a bill to update the repair fund limit. And whenever the drainage work group was asked to take a look at that, we also took a look at all of the different thresholds and limits of funding within drainage law and updated, making recommendations to update them based primarily on inflation, considering when those provisions were first put in place, and then updating those numbers to current values, and also to make it consistent with the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law, which was amended, I believe, 2 years ago as well. So those are some other provisions that are just updating of numbers, if you will. One additional piece that the Drainage Work Group is recommending is an addition to Chapter 103B, Section 101, which is the authorizing authorities for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. The proposal is to add a subdivision 13 that would give Bowser authority to coordinate drainage stakeholder work, if you will, which is essentially what we have been doing, but there is currently no provision in statute for the coordination work that the drainage work group is doing. So that is the recommended subdivision 13 drainage stakeholder coordination. And with that overview, Madam Chair, members, I would stand for questions in regard to any of the provisions that the stakeholder drainage work group is recommending.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kane. And the amendment, I'm sorry, did you describe that in detail?
The amendment is to remove the current provision in the bill for drainage records modernization cost share. The drainage work group recognizes that this is not a general fund year. We are concerned that the provisions of policy would move forward, and therefore the work group is recommending to remove that piece. And the other, and then to add, as I mentioned, the Section 13 of 103B-101. And the other provisions that it's making recommendations to change, recall that last year Senator Fredrickson had amended SF-364 to add an additional requirement for notice of petitions for the use of 103E-805 and 806, the recommended new 806. And that provision was to add a web-based notice. The Drainage Work Group had discussion about that, and there were some concerns, particularly on the part of drainage authorities. The Association of Minnesota Counties had communicated with Senator Fredrickson to modify the language slightly so that, in fact, there would be two forms of notice required and one optional, if you will, or there'd be two that'd be optional. One would be the notice via web, the notice via newspaper. The language currently includes notice via mail to all landowners within the affected area of that petition. So with this amendment, it would essentially change it to a requirement to have notice via mail, and then either notice via a website or a newspaper of general circulation in the area.
All right, would someone care to move the A1 amendment? Senator Chaudhry moves the A1 amendment. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. And members, just to remind you, this bill's gone through the Ag Policy Committee and the Environment Policy Committee, and with the amendment, the appropriation has now been removed. And so I think that's the bulk of the concern that this division had over the bill. So let's see if anyone else would like to be heard on the bill. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just was curious about some of the language that we have in page 2. This is section 2 in B. C. You have the change of plans to concept plans, and I am just curious as to what is the difference? Don't you want plans? What is the difference between concept plans or just having plans?
Madam Chair, Senator, the intent there is to not have a requirement that the final plans for a reroute or a modification to the system be done when it's first petitioned, so that it would be done, but trying to lay out for the drainage authority, here's the concept of what we're proposing, and then get that approval, at which time then the project would move forward to final plans. And if you read down further, you'll find that, in fact, that is the way that it would flow then, if you will. So it's a change of the timing within the statute as to when those requirements are to be fulfilled, but they remain within the requirement of 227.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, Mr. Keene, just kind of a general question. Is the drainage work group, does it deal with all drainage or just drainage ditches?
Madam Chair, Senator, the drainage work group is trying to be holistic in terms of drainage. Its focus was originally born from public drainage systems. That is, in fact, the primary focus. But, in fact, we've also had discussion about, for example, where an urban area moves out over an agricultural area, and there is provision in drainage law since the early 2000s of transfer, for example. So, therefore, in some respects, we're dealing with some boundary line agriculture-urban interface, if you will, of drainage as well.
Madam Chair, Mr. Keene, and tiling as well?
Madam Chair, Senator, absolutely. Yes, tiling is part of the public drainage systems as well, both open ditch and subsurface tile.
All right, thank you. Would anyone else like to speak on this bill? All right, would someone like to move the bill? Senator Saxog moves that Senate File 364 as amended be recommended to pass. And I assume it goes to the floor or to the full finance, I guess, next. On that motion, is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Sparks.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
Next, we've got Senator Metzen. All right. Would someone move the division report? We do have this bill. Senator Vickerman moves adoption of the division report. We have a division report from Senator Tomassoni's division. Oh, we don't have to move it because we're not the full finance committee. Fine. We'll consider it. We'll look at it. It's a suggestion or from Senator Tomassoni's division. Fine. Never mind. We don't have to make a formal motion. Senator Metzen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This jobs bill should not be new to the folks in this room. We passed it last session, or basically a lot of this bill last session. 50-60-11 with strong bipartisan support. This legislation is designed to create jobs and put people back to work. Great, the need is great. There are 250,000 people collecting unemployment as we speak today. About half of our tradespeople are sitting on the bench. Last year, I worked with the Building and Jobs Coalition, a coalition of labor, business, and others to pass the jobs bill, like I said, 50-60-11. We've been listening and working with others, including the governor, the House, and many of my colleagues in the Senate, to put together this project for this bill before you. These initiatives will help build projects. They will work, that will put engineers, architects, contractors, and tradespeople back to work. Part of this bill deals with historic rehab tax credits to preserve our historic buildings in the state of Minnesota. And by the way, they're located all over the state of Minnesota. And once these buildings are down, they're down forever. So this gives some tax credits in the ongoing years to rehab and refurbish and save those buildings. There's some changes in the TIF law. What we're concerned about mainly here today, I believe, is there's provisions for local entities to do green and sustainable projects in this bill. And lastly, it allows some permit extensions for projects that have already been permitted, and they, in some instances, they don't have to go back through all of those permitting things. And we have initiatives that build the businesses and the economy in the future. There's a couple, you've heard of this before, the Angel Investors Tax Credit and the CAPCO credits, where, again, to to create jobs and to there are some indicators that our neighboring states have these angel and credits, and some have the CAPCO, and there's some evidence that we may be losing some jobs because of not having these credits. But the amendments we have today, I don't know, you must have them up there, the A8 amendment. Maybe we could talk about that for a minute. This is dealing with the green chemistry part of the bill. That's in the angel part of the legislation. This is a Senator Dibble's initiative, and he added it before in the bill before you, but then he went back to work, and they streamlined it somewhat. He met with the interested parties, and this is the amended, agreed-upon green chemistry language. So make sure that this is included in the angel investors part of the bill. I'm sure this would be of great interest to this committee. So we'd like to, again, this came from Senator Dibble, just clarifying language that these projects will be included in the angel part of the bill.
All right, Senator Metzen. This amendment relates to the first page. That's the division report from Senator Tomasoni. That's what it's amending, just for reference purposes. Are there questions about the A8 amendment?
I think this has been actually worked on. Senator Dibble worked. Make this agreeable with all. So if we could, I think
questions on the A8 amendment? Okay, would someone like to move it? I think I saw Senator Kubley first. Senator Kubley moves adoption of the A8 amendment. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Metzen, you have another amendment?
Yeah, the second one I'm not quite that familiar with, but it's it was brought to me by the builders and modifies the standards which qualify under the green buildings provision. Mike Robertson and Lisa Frenetti are here and can answer any questions about this amendment. Maybe we might get a couple of words from Mr. Robertson on this amendment. This is the A7 amendment. Do you have it in your file?
It's coming. And, yeah.
With your indulgence, Mr. Robertson, I'll give you a couple of minutes reasoning for this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Robertson. I represent the American Forest and Paper Association and Minnesota Forest Industries. Lisa Frenette represents the Builders Association. We've worked together on this. This is in that portion on the green building section where you refer to the LEED certification. In the Next Generation Energy Act, which you passed in 2008, you also included Green Globes, which is another certification program. And so we're just asking that you include that in this bill as well. The Builders Association has a preference for the National Association of Home Builders National Green Building Standard, and that is referred to in the second part of the amendment as well.
Mr. Robertson, I'm trying to engross this, and I'm not sure if I have it doesn't say on page 7, line 24, do I have the right version? No.
I was confused as well, Madam Chair, because the bill you've got on the table here is first engrossment, and the page numbers are different. So I'm not sure whether I thought it was line 24 on page 7, but which is what the amendment states, but the version that I have from today is the first engrossment, which the page numbers are different.
Okay.
That doesn't match up, does it?
If you're looking at the first engrossment, it would be on line 7, I think.
Of page?
Line 8.
7?
Page 7, line 8.
Okay, is the first engrossment the correct version? Okay. So page 7, line 7. Okay. see. So what you're doing in the amendment is, let's see.
We're adding
You're keeping the LEED certification, but you're adding...
Green globes, correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. It's helpful if we know where
we
are.
So we're working off the second engrossment, which I don't...
Is there a second engrossment?
I guess so. My staff just said that. I don't have it.
Oh. Okay. Sorry, members. We've got
I'm
the
sorry,
wrong
too.
Version.
I yeah.
All right.
So, Madam Chair, I would assume the amendment has the correct page and line
Probably
numbers
so.
For the second engrossment.
Madam Chair, on line 1.1, I would just say after Senate file number 2167, say the second engrossment, just so
yep,
we know which
we know
one
what
we're
amending.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know if there were other changes made in the second engrossment that we don't have in front of us?
Credit.
Ms. Doyle, have you had a chance to look at the different engrossments? Do you know if there's any other?
No, Madam Chair, I think the only thing that has changed in this bill since it was introduced is regarding this green chemistry issue, mm-hmm. as far as I know.
Okay.
And that was also the amendment that was made in the division report
mm-hmm.
yesterday. So as far as I know, there weren't changes between the two.
Madam Chair, I would agree with that these are the two
Okay.
only changes that we've done since the last,
Okay. All right. So on the amendment, the A7 amendment as corrected by council.
It is both.
We'll incorporate Ms. Doyle's suggestion into that. Would someone like to move the A7 amendment?
Oh, it's ours.
Senator Saxog moves adoption of the A7 amendment.
That's
Any
right.
further discussion on that? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now, go ahead, Senator Metzen. Anything else you want to tell us about
just,
the bill?
No, I just want to say that we think that this bill, along with the bonding bill, will get a lot of our people back to work, and this is a very important bill. And how many people will go to work because of this, but I know a lot of people will, and certainly we need jobs out there. So that's what this bill does. It helps create jobs.
So, Senator Metzen, I think we need to, let's see, do we have, we don't have a fiscal note on this or anything? Mr. Mueller?
Madam Chair and members, there is a fiscal note on this bill being, it's still not finalized, but it's in the preliminary stage, but I pulled off the part to make sure that none of the agencies that are under this division have any costs, and Commerce is mentioned in the bill, but they said in the fiscal note that they have no costs. They're not collecting any fees or have any other expenditures due to this bill.
So can Senator Metzen, can you point to, or Mr. Mueller, the parts in the bill that relate to Commerce Department responsibilities?
Madam Chair, I haven't looked at it in that much detail.
Sure.
I just looked at the fiscal note where Commerce just said that they...
Maybe we should just let them come. Mr. DeFebri, can you just talk to us for a moment?
In here for
Welcome to the committee. I know since you told us it doesn't cost you anything, you must know what you're supposed to do in the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's a reasonable assumption, although I don't know whether it's true. My name is Jeremy DeFebri. I know that it doesn't cost us anything, but I don't recall whether we were given the request for a fiscal note, though, because it dealt with, obviously, some energy issues. But my recollection is that it doesn't specifically mention commerce, but I would have to go through the bill again to be sure.
It's all local stuff.
That's why I can't.
I recollect Madam Chair seeing commerce in here, but
it references deed. It references deed.
And most of the money, there is money associated with this bill that goes through deed or through other places, correct? But not through the agencies that we oversee.
I believe that's correct, Madam Chair.
But there's some energy related programs. So is this similar? This is similar to the PACE bill. In
yes.
terms of allowing assessments to pay for energy improvements?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's a part.
That's part of it.
Part of it, yeah.
And that would be, yeah, more of a local issue. Okay, other questions? Did I see a hand? Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Mr. Mueller, on page 9, what about the permits extensions? Is that going to have a fiscal impact?
Chair, Senator.
Senator Metzen.
Chaudhry, I believe most of these, if not all of these extensions, are dealing with local government. I think they're the ones that would extend the permitting permits. So,
Madam Chair, Mr. Mueller, Mr. Knopf from Ms. Doyle, 326B, 462-351, 462-364. Which permits are those? Do those fall under?
Mr. Johnson, would you look it up? Could I get a little
we'll check on that
assistance
for you,
from Mr. Johnson from the League of Minnesota Cities?
That's fine.
I believe it does affect them, quite frankly.
Ms. O'Rourke.
These are local.
Maybe you could clarify that for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jennifer O'Rourke with the League of Minnesota Cities. Senator Chaudhry, this issue did come up in local government, Senator Rest Committee, about a month ago. I believe it comes from a number of the building groups before you. It does deal with local governments, and to be honest with you, we're working on an amendment together with them that would address a number of our concerns because this is pretty general as written, and there are a lot of local process issues, hearings, neighbors sort of issues that come up when you are extending all building permits.
Madam Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
Ms. O'Rourke, do you know which statutes these refer to, 326B, 462?
Ms. Doyle.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, the 326B, 121 is state building code, but subdivision 2 relates to municipal enforcement, so that would be local control, local government. And then 462 is also local government. I haven't looked that up to see what it is specifically, but
local planning and zoning.
Local planning and zoning, Mr. Knopf tells me.
All right. Senator Chaudhry.
So Madam Chair, Section 10, I mean, whoever who can answer it, only deals with permits as they relate to basically local permission.
These are permitting authority is the local government.
Madam Chair, Senator, that's correct. It's still a little work in progress here, but we're gonna get there. But we need. It's not ready for prime time today, but we are working with the league, and it's one of those agreed upon things earlier with the Jobs Coalition, but not 100% agreed upon, I guess, right at this moment. But
and Madam Chair, Senator Metzen, 326B deals with the state building code. So, if I'm reading this correctly, if there is some sort of expansion, that expansion would not have to abide by the state building codes, under this section at least. But you say you're going to work on amending this, but as it reads now, that's what I'm seeing.
The answer to that. I'll look at that.
Maybe.
I don't.
Maybe take a look at that.
It's not the intent to
I'm sure.
Pass by any.
So back, Madam Chair, back to my original question, Mr. Mueller, would there be any fiscal impact, at least on the local level? Because our fiscal notes do have local impacts.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I haven't looked. The fiscal note is in flux right now because it's constantly being changed. So there isn't a final one. I was just focused on the portion that was looking at the Department of Commerce. It's like a 20-page fiscal note that isn't complete right now, so I haven't had a chance to look at the local impact part yet.
And last question, Madam Chair, and to whoever can answer it, in the bill, are there any similar provisions that deal with altering the environmental permitting process for this for your jobs bill.
Senator Benson?
State that I didn't.
Does your bill alter the environmental permitting process in any way in your bill? Thank you.
Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, I'd move that Senate File 2167, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the full committee.
Are there any other questions on the bill? Would anybody else like to be heard on Senate File 2167? All right. You still are going to finance and taxes after this, I presume?
So that's correct. We've been doing, I believe, four committees so far and a couple more to go. And, again, we did this in about five or six committees last year also.
Yes.
So I'm starting to understand the bill pretty well now.
Good, good. Yeah, we'll all get a chance to hear a little bit of it. Mr. Johnson, are you trying to say something?
Madam Chair, Craig Johnson, League of Minnesota Cities. Very briefly, the first article of this bill, except for the last couple sections, does refer to a voluntary mechanism for local governments to use to allow improvements on private property and a way to help finance those. We are supportive of that, very grateful for the president helping us work on this. And we will continue to work on the other sections of the bill where we have concerns. This is very similar to the language in Senator Dahl's bill. That's where we've been more actively working on this so far, but I think the two will end up meeting together later in the process here, is my guess.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah, we had a good discussion about that one in the Energy Committee. Did this go to the Energy Committee, Policy Committee?
No.
Surprised it didn't. Anyway. All right.
Don't add any more.
I won't send you there today. All right. On Senator Frederickson's motion, if there's no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Metzen. Senator Buck, shall we take your jobs bill first?
The whole committee first.
Okay, so we have another division report, but we have the right engrossment.
We have the right engrossment.
Senator Buck, we do have the correct engrossment for this for Senate File 2568. We also have a division report here that talks about green chemistry. It's kind of deja vu here, but just please tell us about your bill.
Madam Chair, the truth is I'm not sure why we're here. This bill doesn't have, other than that reference in the kind of qualifying high technology businesses, the kind of fields that are eligible for the angel investor tax credit, the word green chemistry was added in the definitions of a qualified high tech business. Other than that, this building is our provisions for the angel investor tax credit. That's the same as Senator Metzen's. And there is not an amendment needed for mine for green chemistry. The language that you put in his bill is the same language that's in this engrossment. So Article 1 is the angel investor tax credit that the Senate passed last year. Article 2 is the CAFCO credit that the Senate passed last year. That's also in Senator Metzen's bill. Article 3 is the historic building tax credit that was in last year's Senate tax bill that passed the Senate. And then Article 4 are some tax increment finance changes, creation of a compact development TIF district that was contained in last year's Senate tax bill. There are some changes to liberalize the use of economic development TIF districts in here that are new and that the tax committee will look at. And then there are provisions in here, the same provisions that were contained in last year's Senate tax bill, to allow the phasing of the expansion at the Mall of America. And then in last year's Senate tax bill, there also were provisions where we increased the number of housing replacement district units, TIF districts, in some selected cities. And that is the extent of what's in the bill. They're really all tax provisions.
All right, Senator.
I'm not sure why Senator Tomasoni sent it other than that green chemistry word in the definition of the qualifying businesses, because the fees that are in here both for the Capco program and for the Angel Investor program actually go to Deed to help administer the cost of the programs at Deed.
Well, there are several provisions related to incentives for green manufacturing or for energy improvements, and I presume that's why they sent it to us. There's not a direct cost to commerce, though, in this bill, in the fiscal note. So I think we're just reviewing it to review those portions of the bill.
There is a cost, Madam Chair, on the fiscal note to the Department of Revenue. There's a provision in the bill that make the tax credits transferable, and we're working with the Department of Revenue because they're actually have put a number of about $150,000 as a cost for the department to handle the paperwork of the transferable tax credits. So we're working with the Department of Revenue. I had a discussion with the commissioner to make them a refundable credit, which would make the cost over at the Department of Revenue go away. So we'll take a look at that when we get the tax committee. But that's the only fiscal impact I'm aware of. It's actually at the Department of Revenue.
All right. Did you have witnesses who would like to speak to us? Okay. We have some listed, but they don't need to speak today. All right. Questions? Comments? Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I just want to thank you for bringing this forward. Ever since I was in the House in 1996, I'd talked to, our legislative leaders about trying to do some sort of business investment credit, and I was always poo-pooed. And so I'm glad you took the reins and developed something that's entirely doable. Get it.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, thank you. This has been a pretty tough pull. I started working on this in 2007, had much of this in the 2007 tax bill that ended up vetoed. But the idea of the angel credit's been around quite a few years. Senator Sams had it. Senator Langseth had it. I've had it. Senator Saltzman is the chief author now of the angel credit, so it's maybe she'll be the one that's finally successful with it.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I don't understand what's wrong with us getting this done. So many other states do this as a no-brainer, and we lose out so much business as a result, whether it be the film industry or what. I don't understand why it's not so easy for us to pass this type of thing. But I'm glad you're doing it. I hope we pass it this year.
Senator Bach, what's the St. Paul provision on page 32? I'm not familiar with that.
That's, Madam Chair, a provision that was asked for last year by the City of St. Paul to allow them to exercise the power of creating housing replacement districts. It's language requested by the Senator Moore had the bill last year. It was in last year's Senate tax bill, but we weren't able to enact it into law.
All right. Senator Bach moves that Senate file 2568 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. Senator Chaudhry.
I have a question, Madam Chair, Senator Bach, about on page 28 about in the economic development districts about deleting some of the bedrock soils conditions, 80% or more. Stable soils, what does that refer to?
It just allows, under current law, there are limitations on what tax increment financing is eligible to be used for. This just expands some of the uses for tax increment financing to cover more of the cost of a project's initial site development. That work is currently being done. It's just not eligible for tax increment financing.
And then, Madam Chair and Senator Bach, on page 30 and 31, is this the scattered site housing TIF? And I was informed by my city that there was was going to expire. I don't exactly know what happened. What does this part do?
Madam Chair, the housing replacement districts are scattered housing, allows them to TIF individual house projects. This expands the use of it from 50 to 100 parcels and adds the City of Brooklyn Park. They requested to be included in it. I think we added a city last year also. But mainly it increases the number of parcels that are eligible in a city to be able to help be eligible for tax increment financing.
And Madam Chair, Senator Bach, you're eliminating the per year limit?
Correct.
Is this, Madam Chair, Senator Bach, is this scatter site provision expiring soon? I can't remember what my city was telling me.
You know, I don't believe so. The problem is they bump up against the cap and they can't put any additional units in because they've had a cap of 50 parcels is all they can have. So that was the reason to expand it from 50 to 100 so they could, if they were having a problem with it, it was because they were bumping up against the cap and so they couldn't put any additional units into it.
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Bach, that's very good.
Senator Chaudhry, I couldn't quite hear you. Was that a question?
No.
Okay. Any
compliment?
Okay. any other comments, Senator Dill?
Madam Chairman, Senator Bach, I was in your office maybe a month or 2-3 weeks ago with the mayor of Hutchinson and their engineer. And is there anything in here that deals with the city of Hutchinson and the sales tax opportunity to reduce?
Madam Chair and Senator Dill, no. This bill ultimately is going to end up in the Senate Tax Committee, and whether it runs on its own or not, I don't know. Representative Lincheski has the companion bill to this, and the understanding that we have with the House is we would try to pre-conferee a bill with an agreement with the governor's office with a funding stream to pay for the angel credit and the historic building tax credit. The cost of the tax credits is about $12 to $15 million. And what we need to identify with the Department of Revenue is some revenue the governor's willing to support. And if we are able to accomplish that, this jobs bill will go on its own to the governor. If not, it'll likely to be part of the omnibus tax bill. But there's not currently anything in here for the city of Hutchinson. But that bill, we'll be hearing that bill in the tax committee. And Senator Dill, I think that my tax committee members look favorable on the request of the city of Hutchinson.
Okay, thank you.
I'm not sure how they will go in conference, though.
All right. Members, anything further? Did I ask if would anyone else like to be heard on Senate File 2568? All right. Senator Bach renews his motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Bach, you want to go ahead with Lake Vermilion next?
Sure, Madam Chair.
Members, let me just say, in Senator Chaudhry's committee, we had two bills. I have a bill also that would lift the cap on state bonds to allow the Lake Vermilion State Park to be created, to allow the purchase from U.S. Steel to go forward. And we decided to go ahead and schedule Senator Bach's bill today and let him move that forward on its own and take it to the floor. It is Senator Bach's district, and I know it's important to him. And what I will intend to do is to have take the language of my bill or some variation and just put it in our second bill that we passed, so we just have it as a backup plan. And what I had asked Mr. Jarofsky to poll some committee members just quickly to get a sense about the issue of merging the two state parks. And this is just by way of introduction to Senator Bach's bill, because his approach was to suggest combining the Sudan Underground Mine State Park and the new Lake Vermilion State Park together into one. And so, members, we just need to talk about that today and see what – I guess it was rather inconclusive in terms of what members thought. There was – we didn't get a clear signal one way or the other. I guess Senator Saxog thought it was a good idea, and some people didn't have strong feelings one way or the other. And I guess if we merged them, people care about the name of it.
Well, Madam Chair, I suspect once this is finally developed, it's a contiguous boundary between
–
I mean, they're attached – and I very strongly suspect that there's going to be one entrance to the Sudan and the Vermilion Park. There'll be one visitor center. My intent was to just try and make sure we don't create a whole nother bureaucracy of a second state park when they were contingent to each other and actually share the same entrance. I'm certainly don't have anything special in mind for the name, whether it's the Lake Vermilion Underground Mine State Park or just the Lake Vermilion Park. Frankly, I don't much care what we call it, but I think having a state park that preserves the mine history, the place where iron ore mining started in Minnesota, is a good thing to do. And if any of you have not been to Sedan, it really is a pretty unique state park. So I don't at all want to diminish the importance of the Sedan Underground Mine State Park. Just want to recognize that this is really one parcel of land, and it's all contiguous. And I wouldn't want some future commissioner of DNR to decide somehow that they should be run as two separate parks just because they are separate parks.
Well, Senator Buck, I think that makes perfect sense. You know, just as a matter of efficiency, why would we have two neighboring parks that have two park rangers, two buildings, two everything? And, you know, it just makes sense. So I think the only question, Senator Fredrickson had raised the issue, you know, preserving the historic identity of the Sedan Underground Mine, I think, is important. And so how to do that, I think, is a question. And I wonder, is the DNR here? Do they have any opinion about this? Senator Buck, why don't you present your bill, if there's anything else you want to say about your bill, and then we can see if anybody wants to comment on that.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure why the new land needs to be named the Lake Vermilion State Park. I don't know why the new land just couldn't be incorporated as a part of the Sedan Underground Mine State Park. I don't know why we'd have to have a name called the Lake Vermilion State Park when it could probably just as easily all be the Sedan Underground Mine State Park. I don't see a reason for a second name, actually. So, I mean, to Senator Fredrickson's point, seems like just having it named the Sedan Underground Mine State Park would accomplish the preservation aspect and incorporate all the land into one boundary would probably be the sensible thing to do. But anyway, what the bill does, Madam Chair, is in addition to try to make one park boundary, is it waives the requirement, the 12% requirement that was put in the bonding bill in 2008. There was a provision put in the bonding bill that appropriated $20 million for the Lake Vermilion State Park. And in the provision, it said we couldn't pay more than 12% of the appraised value of the land. And the purchase price that was negotiated with U.S. Steel exceeds the 12% threshold in law. So the bill takes the 12% threshold out for this purchase. Doesn't impact other park purchases, but for the purposes of this purchase, it takes the 12% provision out. That really is about all that's here, Madam Chair. I don't know if the committee, if Mr. Knopf has an amendment that kind of clarifies the boundary issue or not.
Debt service? Okay, I'm confused.
And we may.
Oh, it's not already in the budget forecast.
I think it's probably the A1 amendment, Madam Chair.
Because it can't happen.
Okay, well, Senator Buck, this is what I was going to ask you. So if you merged them, okay, well, go ahead and explain your amendment.
Well, this, Madam Chair, this amendment merges them. And it names it the Lake Vermilion State Park and Sedan Underground Mine State Park, which I'm not sure we need to do. I wish Senator Fredrickson was here, because he's the one that had the issue about the name.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach.
Senator Chaudhry.
While we're waiting for Senator Fredrickson, I was just thinking that oftentimes what happens is they just get hyphenated. We have lots of hyphenated names all around, not only the state but the country. So if it's, you know, Vermilion Sedan Mine State Park, the Sedan Mine Vermilion Park, maybe the wordsmiths at the DNR can just figure that out. I like Lake Vermilion, but I agree that people should know that this mine thing is good too. It has a lot of historic value.
I'm just looking, Madam Chair, on line 1.4, we maybe don't need State Park in here twice. We could maybe take State Park off after the word Lake Vermilion. It could say Lake Vermilion and Sedan, Underground Mine State Park.
Yeah. Well, I think that would make a little more sense.
But Madam Chair, it's referring to two different state parks. It's not merging them.
That's not the name.
It's referring to Lake Vermilion State Park and Sedan Underground Mine State Park.
And the management. Okay, no, I understand.
But does this reference, this doesn't reference a merger. This is not referencing the land in both of them.
Right.
So, Senator Buck, why don't you explain the amendment, what you're trying to do here?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm trying to merge the two parks and put them under the same payment in lieu of tax formula that the Vermilion land is under, and put it under one management in Section 2, and then Section 3 waives the 12% threshold on the purchase. I'm trying to create one park.
So the main difference with your original bill is that this would allow the Sudan Park to be also receive the PILT bump, and also makes it clear that public access would continue until the park is developed.
Right, Madam Chair.
So we have the fiscal note. We do have a fiscal note on the bill, and the fiscal note is based on the PILT, because adding Vermilion to our state parks would create a new PILT obligation based on the law that I think you passed last year, Senator Bach.
Two years ago, that
makes it an extra bump for PILT for the land, 1.5%. Okay, so, and this would do the same thing for Sudan. So this would sort of bootstrap them into your PILT formula. So, Mr. Mueller, why don't you talk about the fiscal note and the impact of the amendment, if you would.
Madam Chair, the fiscal note just addressed the PILT costs, and right now, if we just add Lake Vermilion, it's not included in the PILT forecast for fiscal years. This would just be in the tails. The PILT for Lake Vermilion, the new Lake Vermilion Park, would start in fiscal year 12, and finance was estimating that would be about $305,000 per year, at least for the first 5 years, and then could presumably change. The amendment now would add Sudan Park to the new PILT formula that's being used for Vermilion. And right now, Sudan, under the current formula, generates about $90,000 of PILT. But it's being reassessed. So actually, in fiscal year 12, it would go up to $122,000, because every 5 years, each piece of land gets reassessed or reevaluated. So two things would happen. Going from 92 to 122 would happen under current law, but this would double the 122 up to about 244. So would then be added to the total open appropriation for the PILT. So the fiscal note, based on the amendment now, would maybe go up to, 427 now for fiscal years 12 and 13. And I did talk to Mr. Mossman about how we would track this, since it's just in tails. As it goes through the Finance Committee, we'll have to keep track of this cost, on our overall tracking spreadsheet, that this is an additional general fund obligation, at least in the tails.
So, Senator Buck, when we acquired the land for the Sudan State Park from
U.S. Steel.
Oh, it was from U.S. Steel also? Okay. Do you know, Mr. Knopf, when that was purchased?
Probably the mine shut down in about 63. I think it was about 1965.
Okay. So basically.
Right about 65.
I'm concerned about this. I mean, we already have a large cut, over $1 million cut to PILT in the current biennium that we're proposing, which I know, Senator Bach, you're trying to fix. And we also, by going ahead with the park, we have additional PILT payments, which the legislature's already approved. That's law.
But I think if you want to also bring in the Sudan Mine Park, you're adding more obligations into the general fund for land that's been off the tax rolls since when?
1963.
I'm not sure. That might be a little bit of a stretch. You know, I'm sure your county would really appreciate it, but and the school district. I'm just not sure if that's advisable right now for us to be adding those obligations in for a park that already that's been in existence for almost as long as I've been alive. Okay, let's see. I'm showing my age, but yeah, almost 50 years.
Madam Chair, I'm trying to temper some of the I don't know if I have one county commissioner that supports this park. I'm trying to temper some of the opposition.
And sweeten the pot. I understand the dilemma that you're in. I guess the other thing I would say is that price tag, I mean, how much money does it cost to operate the Sudan mine, I'm wondering, on a yearly basis? I mean, we're talking about, like, their operating budget. probably. I don't know. Is there anyone here from the DNR who's willing to step forward? Oh, good. Senator Fredrickson, let me just call on you.
Madam Chair, I was just thinking about the question you asked, how much does it cost to operate Sudan?
Yeah.
I'm wondering what the revenue side of that is, too. I wonder what the net cost is. Because
it's a very good question. Sir, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, my name is Ron Potter with Parks and Trails Division. The question, I believe, is what's the operating cost of the Sudan Underground Mine currently?
Do you have any idea? Do you know that off the top?
I have a rough idea.
Okay.
It's about a half a million.
Okay. Do you know how much revenue it would bring in annually?
I don't have those numbers. I can get them for you, but I don't have those.
And Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Potter, also the number of visitors?
Mr. Potter?
I don't have that. I'll get it for you.
Well, Madam Chair, I think that's it is the cost of operating the park is offset by the fact that I think to take the elevator and go down and take the tour, you actually have to pay.
Yeah,
there's a fee for that. So you can't get into the underground mine by just having an annual park sticker in this case. You actually have to pay a fee to go on the tour. And then I don't know what they sell for merchandise there that brings in revenue. I don't know.
Well, there's probably – is there camping there? Are there other facilities? Okay. Sometimes those bring in money. Senator Saxhog?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bach, do you remember, or Mr. Potter, that it is, you know, the people that hang out down in the, all the way you go down there with the, do they pay any kind of rent, or is there any kind of deal there that brings in income?
You know, Senator Madam Bach. Chair, the University of Minnesota has two very large science labs down there, and I do not know what the arrangement is between the state and the University of Minnesota. But I do know that I believe DNR charges the University of Minnesota for the use of the elevator. There is some kind of an ongoing revenue stream that we charge the University of Minnesota. And Mr. Potter might know better than I do.
Mr. Potter?
Madam Chair, yes, we do charge them for the use of the elevator, and they also pay part of the utilities and the basic operating costs. So, yeah, they do contribute to the
okay.
operation of that facility.
Okay. Well, there must be, there must be additional costs related to running the lab that the DNR is not paying, I presume. So they're covering their share of lights for that enormous space and electricity, I would hope.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. And maybe someday they'll, you know, make billions of dollars when they discover something that the rest of us can understand and use, which I'm sure will happen.
How about just something we can use? We don't have to understand.
We don't even have to understand it. You're right. I mean, I couldn't tell you how a cell phone works, but it's really useful. All right. I think, Senator Bach, I'm just nervous about this merger thing sort of opening the door to more, you know, what if other counties want to come in and say, well, we have a state park that's been sitting around for decades, can we get pilt for that too? And extra pilt, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's really appropriate.
Madam Chair, I think it's kind of interesting how we score pilt costs, because I've carried a number of state park boundary bills over the years, and I can't ever remember seeing a fiscal note on a state park boundary bill when we expanded the park boundary and put additional land in nobody ever scored PILT as a cost. And last year, when the legacy bill went out, there was about $133,000 or so of new PILT money going to be paid out from the state's general fund, and somehow, I don't know if that got scored either. There was a lot of discussion about it, I remember, about whether the legacy account should actually be charged that or the general fund should be charged it. But the whole idea of scoring a PILT cost when we do state land acquisition is relatively new. Mm-hmm. I don't know who has this year's state parks boundary bill, but I am assuming it has a fiscal note attached to it. And Madam Chair, I don't know if the LCCMR bill that you're the author of has got some land acquisition in it in about a half a dozen parks, and I don't know if that has a fiscal note attached to the LCCMR bill when that bill came through the committee, but it seems we're pretty inconsistent when we come to scoring whether PILT costs are real money or not, and I think some of that's just because it's an open appropriation.
Well, I think you're right, Senator Bach, that we haven't been consistent about it, and we had some discussion in the Lessard-Sams Council about whether whether the Heritage Fund dollars should be used to pay PILT obligations, and I think, you know, the consensus was no, we didn't think that's what that money should be used for, that should remain a general fund obligation. But it certainly does create PILT obligations. Absolutely, you're right. And we don't always count them. So I don't think that should be a burden for passing your original bill as it is drafted, because that's current law anyway, and we're talking about the tails. It wouldn't add to what you're trying to fix in the tax committee. I think my concern is whether we want to kind of reel in Sudan and add them into the pot.
Madam Chair, if I could add to my argument, there are eight of us. There are eight of us that consider ourselves Iron Range legislators. I am the only one of the eight that supports this park.
Yeah, I understand that, Senator.
Yeah, I'm just trying to temper some of the opposition. There's a very legitimate concern among the rest of the Range delegation that there's never going to be a park here. I mean, it is a very legitimate concern that we're just going to take 3,000 acres of land, turn it into state land, and because there currently is no money for development. And I tell you what, I'm going to be pretty disappointed if every 2 years whoever represents that district has to come down here and beg for bonding money to buy a couple of picnic tables, to develop maybe one campsite. And I don't think it's ever going to be a park. I mean, I'll say it. I don't believe it's ever going to happen. I think the state will buy the land. But when you consider what's in the legislative auditor's report about the DNR's management of current land and all the deferred maintenance, it's going to be very difficult for this committee to prioritize spending $20 to $40 million on developing the park at Vermilion, because it's a very big endeavor. It's going to be very, very difficult to make the argument that that is more important than taking care of the $125 million or whatever the maintenance number is that the legislative auditor had in their report. Going forward, I'm very doubtful that it's ever going to be a state park, so I'm just trying to protect the taxpayers in the county some, because I have told them I thought it was going to be a park. Mm-hmm. And but I know how heavy lifting is going to be around here. I've asked Governor Plenty. I personally asked Governor Plenty 2 weeks ago if he would request from the bonding committee $10 or $15 million to start the park development. I had that discussion with Commissioner Holston multiple times, once again yesterday. Please ask Senator Langseth for $10 or $15 million for development so that we actually make something, so that it's more than just buying the land. So far, I haven't been successful at that. But I understand the competition is going to be for money for future park development, and the committee is going to be right. We should clean up some of this maintenance that we have in our other parks before we build another one. But the governor has decided that this is important, and he's going to get the land. The question is whether we'll ever get the park development money.
Senator Bach, I guess I'll have to I feel a little more optimistic than you do about getting this park done. And I guess I'll just give you my personal commitment that I want to make sure it happens. And as long as I can help make that happen, I will. I wasn't sure how the Senate would respond to the idea of moving ahead with the sale at the higher price. But I found almost unanimous support in the Senate among
senators that I've talked to, and I think it's because, despite all those concerns, we don't want to take away from the state park system that we already have and that deferred maintenance, but people see this as a really special, unique opportunity in a beautiful place. So I think it does, it should be in a bonding bill, though, because we're not going to be able to pay for it out of just regular budget dollars. That would be very, very difficult. So we'll have to make sure that gets done. All right, members, I think this has been a good discussion. Senator Chaudhry, we'll have to come to a vote pretty soon.
Madam Chair, a procedural question on the A1. It says delete everything after the enacting clause. Why is the amendment a delete everything bill?
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, maybe counsel can answer why it's drafted that way.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, Senator Chaudhry, Senator Bach's office contacted me and said that they wanted to. This is sections 2 and 3 are similar to what was in the House bonding bill, and so what they asked for was to have it similar to what was in the House bonding bill, but then also to include section 1 on the, as the chair has been talking about, the enhanced PILT for this land. So what this is a combination of what's in the House bonding bill plus the enhanced PILT, and so it was done as a delete everything amendment because, as I understood, putting two parks together was not going to be considered further at this point in time.
By whom?
By Senator Bach. That was just a message that got to me.
Well, it doesn't specifically call for the merger, but the DNR wouldn't have the authority to do that without us specifically stating it, I presume.
No, Madam Chair. These would be two separate parks. They're listed as separate parks. The issue would be the management, but DNR could manage them together. They manage many cases. There could be one manager for 4 or 5 of these smaller state parks. I mean, they could manage it as one park, but under the statutory authority, they would remain as two separate entities named in the statutes.
Well, we could change that any time,
right.
But we've got plenty of time before this gets to the point where they're going to be building a big new visitor center, so we'd have a little time, I hope. Not a long time, but.
Madam Chair,
Senator Bach.
For the benefit of this committee, I mentioned it in the policy committee, is that my vision, and whether I'll be on some perch here someplace to ever carry it out, I don't know, but is that this park really be jointly run by the DNR and the Historical Society, like the Split Rock Lighthouse one is. I mean, the Historical Society should be contributing to the cost of running the Sedan Park. And if we were going to build an interpretive center there, it seems to me that would be a good shared project between the Historical Society and the DNR, much like we do Split Rock. Split Rock is done the same way.
Right, and so we have legacy funds that could be used for both of those purposes jointly. So that's.
So, Madam Chair, Senator
nice
Buck,
Senator Chaudhry,
you're not interested in combining the parks anymore?
Well,
Senator Buck.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, yes, I am, except that the bonding committee didn't want to get into that much detail. This amendment was actually drafted to try and deal with the. Well, to back up, the department sent me a fiscal note and said that the language that we initially had drafted to combine the two parks didn't accomplish what we had intended to try and put both of them under the enhanced PILT formula. So then the bonding community contacted us, and the bonding committee wanted to carry it. The House really feels strongly about carrying this in the bonding bill, and the governor wants this done. And he thinks the bonding bill is the safest place to do it. The governor and the House have kind of teamed up against the Senate to try and resolve this Vermilion acquisition issue in the bonding bill. So it's kind of been a combination between trying to work with the bonding committee and then move this bill alone. And we may find out that once the bonding conference committee is resolved, that there may not be a need for the bill.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Senator Bach, why not continue with your bill until we know that?
I think, Madam Chair, that's what I'd like to do.
So then, Madam Chair, Senator Bach, you don't need it to be a delete everything amendment. You just want to.
Well, if there was a way, and I was just, Senator Fredrickson raised the issue of the name and was just trying to avoid having to get into the name issue here. And I think that's right. I think the name should recognize Sedan, and the original language I had didn't. So
section 1.
Mr. Meyer maybe knows more about it.
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, members, if you tell me what it is. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Sorry, I was out in the hallway.
Do you have an opinion or anything to say about the merger, possible merger of the Sudan Underground State Park and Lake Vermilion State Park? Is there any preferred language for you in this bill?
Madam Chair, members, thank you. And we have been discussing this with our local group that we've been working with in the area. Some people were concerned about the elimination of the Tower Sudan Underground mine reference. I think this language works for us. We certainly will be managing the park out of one unit. I think most of the people around this table have had the opportunity to be up there. And when we congregated at the Tower Sudan Underground mine facility, there is an office location. There's a small parking lot. We'll need more parking facilities. But that entrance, those facilities we will use as our management core for right now. But there's no sense to have a park manager in Tower Sudan and Vermilion. We will be operating this as one unit. So the name change, as I see it here, is incorporating the two names together.
Are you looking at the original bill, not the amendment, I presume?
I have an A1 amendment in front of me, Madam Chair.
That doesn't the A1 amendment.
You're working off the bill itself.
Well, the A1 amendment doesn't propose a name change. It's just referencing the two parks. It removes the concept of a merger. It doesn't specifically say that.
And Madam Chair, just on a specific note, I can say this: we talked about the issue with our task force up there. There was concern about losing the identity for the Tower Sudan Underground Mine Park. We haven't talked to them about combining the two names, but we certainly can do that and let you know where people's preferences are. Senator Bach probably has a better feeling for the area's willingness to combine the two names, but our certain preference will be our management will be out of one unit, so we will be operating it as one unit.
I'm not sure that we really need to say one way or the other. I think we could just leave that for now and deal with the merger decision later on and spend some more time with all the affected parties figuring that one out. Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I do have an amendment to the A1 that might get at what you're trying to do. It would be on 1.2. We already have the management section from the law that creating this park, and so on 1.26, you could say, after the period, all lands shall be managed as one park unit with the Sudan Underground Mine State Park, so that it's clear in the management in the law that it should be managed as one unit. We'll still keep the separate identity in the statute, but that it would be managed as one unit.
Well, Madam Chair, I think
Senator Bach.
Let me incorporate Mr. Knopf's oral language into there, and then for the committee's discussion, I guess. And that would direct the department to manage it as one park.
Right. Which is what they intend to do anyway.
Right.
Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, I was going to maybe if you could take a suggestion back to your group for a name, Vermilion / Sudan Mine State Park.
All right. Thanks for that suggestion. All right, members, what do you want to do? I guess I am not sure how members want to proceed. We have the A1 amendment in front of us. Do we want to go in that direction?
We
do want to put a bill on the floor that approves the park, that lets the purchase go forward and have a Senate position that will help us, that maybe could be incorporated in the bonding bill. I think that's part of Senator Bach's intention. I would support that. Members?
Madam Chair, the delete everything doesn't do the combination, though.
The delete everything includes the new PILT for the existing state park. It includes the access language, and then it takes away the requirement that they be merged into one park.
Well, that's what helps the purchase.
It also has that removes the cap on the last page, yeah. It removes that, the cap, and that allows the purchase to go forward.
I see. Okay.
That's the magic line. Chair. Senator Frederickson.
Unless there's a motion to make further amendments to this A1 amendment, we should vote.
All right. Any other questions, members? All right, Senator Bach moves the A1 amendment.
With the modification.
With the language incorporated as suggested by Mr. Knopf relating to the joint management. On the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Bach moves that Senate File 2533 as amended be recommended to pass, referred to the Senate floor. Onto finance. I keep forgetting about that finance committee. That's really we're part of.
Dick Cohen gets in our way.
Don't tell Dick Cohen. Yeah, Senator Cohen. All right. On the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. We have one more bill left, members. And this Senator Saxog is authoring the bill relating to cross-country ski fees. And Mr. Darby Nelson, Representative Nelson, is here in support of the bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 2863 deals with cross-country ski passes and the increase thereof. I'm a cross-country skier, an avid cross-country skier, although I may not look like one. And if you look on the third page, it's been provided for you. It gives you a list of all the different trails which are maintained and groomed due to the grant aid grants that this particular pass provides for. And if you look about a third of the way down under Itasca County, you see the Sugar Hills Ski Area, which used to be a downhill ski area. And about 15 years ago, a group of us decided if they weren't going to run as a downhill ski area, we'd like to have as a cross-country ski area. And so we applied for grant aid and got $6,000 to do that on an annual basis. I think some of you remember, it is now also one of our new conservation easements. It's owned
That's
by
right.
the Ryla companies.
In the middle of the summer when there were huge numbers of mosquitoes.
Yeah, large mosquitoes.
I'd love to go up there sometime and ski.
Oh, it's beautiful. It is. It's
wood ticks.
The top of the top hill is the highest point in Itasca County. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that 15 years ago we got $6,000 a year, and it's continued. And the price for grooming hills has changed. And though most of this is done on a volunteer basis, you still need a certain amount of dollars. So as you said, Madam Chair, with me today is Representative Darby Nelson, who is also an avid cross-country skier. And he's going to give some additional testimony.
Great. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here. And what I'll try to do is, not knowing the familiarity level of all the committee members with the program, I'll try to be brief but maybe a bit comprehensive. I don't know how many of you do cross-country ski, but if you do, in many parts of the state, you have to buy one of these to be legal. It looks like a fishing license or a small game hunting license and that sort of thing. There are three different licenses or for fees that you can pay. One is for daily, just single day use. Another is for annual. And the other is a 3-year pass. And each one of those costs obviously different amounts. What happens is that money goes into the grant and aid program, which is administered by the DNR. And they then feed out grants to local units of government, typically counties, in some cases a township, a city, who then move the money to the local clubs. The grant aid program includes 175 trail systems, 725 miles of trails. And again, I would advise you, if you've not already, as Senator Saxog indicated, you've got the those are all listed on the back of this handout, but it also includes a map on the other side that certainly indicates that it clearly is a statewide operation. The Minnesota Nordic Ski Association is bringing this bill forward. I am a member of the board of that association. It's a 501c3 group of volunteers. We are basically the liaison between DNR and the organized ski community across the state. And it is that ski community that comes to you to ask for your allowance of an increased fee. The proposal is basically to move from a daily pass costing $5 to $6 instead, the annual from $15 to $20, the three-year from $40 to $55. So why now? Why a request to increase the fees? Fuel costs are going up. There's more sophisticated equipment that's used. Clubs right now are running out of money in February, which means they can't do the grooming, which is what brings folks out to ski. Also, the DNR cannot add additional trails. There have been a number of entities, number of communities, organizations, so forth, said, gee, we'd like to be participants in that, and DNR has had to say there's no money to do that. Is it reasonable? Is the request reasonable? Well, as I said, this is basically, you know what, to make this really simple, what skiers are doing is they're coming to you folks and saying, we know St. Paul doesn't have any money. We're simply asking that you allow us as skiers in an organized way to pay the freight so that we can continue enjoying the sport. Isn't it reasonable? Horse pass is $21. Small game is $19. Private ski areas, you're going to pay as much as $15 per day to ski on those areas. So it is a reasonable request. Let me just indicate also that the folks that say it is reasonable, and I've got the original letters, and I'm just going to rattle this off, and it'll show you the spread across the state of folks who are saying, yes, legislature, please let us pay a little bit more. Minnesota Nordic Ski Association, which I've already described, the Duluth Cross Country Ski Club, the Bemidji Area Cross Country Ski Club, the Brainerd Nordic Ski Club, the City of Lakes Nordic Ski Foundation in the Twin Cities, Mora Vasalopa, Northern Lights Ski Club in Itasca County, the Itasca Tour Ski Bike Run Club in Park Rapids, the Nordic Ski Club of Central Minnesota out of St. Cloud, North Star Ski Touring Club in Minneapolis, Minnesota Finlandia Community Sports Group. Those are all folks that have lots of members. I think there are 1,000 members in the North Star Club. St. Cloud has hundreds of members. So these are not just, you know, hotshot racers interested in having opportunities to ski. This is mom and pop folks that are going to come in and benefit from the trails. Let me just very quickly touch on two other issues. You guys are buried with health care issues. You know, it's running rampant, and I'm sure you're all aware that half of those costs and half of the medical issues that arise because we don't go outside. We got all the electronic gadgets inside the house, and as a result, you know, our kids and us are really jeopardizing our own health as well as costing everybody a lot of money. This is one way. If you've got the trails that people like to use, you can get people out there, and it can have a real health impact. The other thing, and I'll end with this, is a week and a half ago, I spent a weekend in Hayward, Wisconsin. I love to ski, and I was with 8,000 people that day as the Birkebeiner ski race was taking place. Let me tell you, the counties around Hayward will tell you millions of dollars stay in those counties. People come to those places. It is clearly a tourism, economic development, economic boost for areas that have what skiers want, which is groomed trails, reasonably convenient to access. With that, if there are questions, I'll do what I can in answering.
Madam Chair, we have a fiscal note for this, and shows that 71,000 is coming in, 71,000 would go out, and I too would stand for questions. If not, I would move the bill.
Thank you both very much. Senator Fredrickson.
Chair, I have a question, and I also have a little amendment I'd like to make. But the question is to Mr. Nelson. The figures I heard you say at the beginning of your presentation, I thought were a dollar different than the ones that are in the bill. So, would you clarify?
I'd like to do that, and I don't know if you got DNR help. But it turns out that the numbers that I gave you are what the skier will pay, but that there's a part of that that's used for, where it says $19, that would be 20. There's a dollar that gets used for, is it
administration,
I assume.
It's the
Ron, is that?
It's whoever issues it.
So let's ask Mr. Knopf to clarify how that works, please.
Okay. Madam Chair, what happens is there's a dollar issuing fee in all of these. It's similar to game and fish licenses where you have to add that on. When you're looking at what the person actually pays at the counter, and the issuer then gets to keep the dollar for the making the sale.
So the $19 is actually 18 into the, or it's actually 20.
20.
Okay, so it's added on top. There you go. That makes sense.
Yep.
Thank you for noticing that. Senator Fredrickson?
And Madam Chair, then I'd like to move on page 1, line 17, delete other. And on line 19, delete another and insert the word A, or the letter A.
Where was the second A?
Line 19, delete another
okay.
and insert the letter A.
Good changes.
That's fine with us.
Is that all right with you, Senator Sexton?
Yes.
All right. Let's, on Senator Fredrickson's motion, does everyone understand the amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Was there anyone else who wanted to speak on this bill? Okay. Now, I know you probably came up with these numbers based on what you thought the fee should be, correct? Or did you base it on what you thought the revenue should be? Or was it sort of both?
Madam Chair, we based it on what we thought you folks would find palatable.
Okay.
This has been underfunded from day one. I mean, if you compare it to the privates, compare it to some of the cities who've opted out, it's pretty small potatoes in comparison. That was it. I mean, we clearly feel that.
So it's not going to groom all the trails we want, but it's going to help.
Help a bit, exactly.
Senator Fredrickson?
Madam Chair, when we first instituted the fee for skiing, it was fairly controversial.
Yeah.
A lot of people were objecting to charging for cross-country skiing, something that should be free.
And so that begs the question, do you know of anyone who's opposed to this idea, to raising these fees? Have you heard of any opposition?
I have not heard of any opposition. We've put it on the Skinny Ski website to try to, let people know what's going on.
We talked about this earlier. In the metro parks area of the state, the part that is covered by the metropolitan regional parks, the Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the other regional parks, they don't follow this system, correct?
It varies. The
it
city
varies.
Of Minneapolis
okay.
does not. They have opted out. Three Rivers Parks has opted out. St. Paul, however, Battle Creek Park is a part of the Grant
Creek
Made program.
But yeah. Como Park is not. So as far as I know. When I ski, that's where I ski. Usually, when I just go for an hour in my neighborhood, I just go over to Como Park Golf Course, and you can't buy a permit there. You can ask, and they say, we don't have those here. So I'm not sure if that's informal or official.
And I'm not actually sure what the situation is on Como. I do know for Battle Creek.
So I guess people are going to want to know if they just want to pick up and go to the local park, if they can do that. I guess if they do that now without a permit, it's safe to say they will probably continue doing it now without a permit. But in the established parks where they do enforce this and they do sell the permits, then they would be subject to this. I guess I would like a little clarity. Can anyone tell us exactly what the law requires for where the permits are required, Mr. Kanoff?
Madam Chair, it's required wherever state money is spent on maintenance of the trail. And so if there's money going to Como Park for maintaining their trail from the state, then they would be required to have a pass at the park. Now, they may not sell them there. That doesn't mean you're not required to have one there, because remember, when we went to the electronic licensing system, there are only so many of these machines that are out there. You can still stop at a Holiday Station or something like that and buy the state pass. But I know Como used to sell the paper pass, because I remember bringing my kids there years ago and buying the paper pass there.
But I think, I mean, and maybe it was just whoever was working there at the time said, oh, we don't use those here. It wasn't just we don't sell them. It was,
but that's
and keep in mind that Como Park, about over 90% of the cost of running Como Park comes from the city, from city taxpayers. So there is some state funding that goes to the park, but I think but it's a very small percentage of the park. And so maybe they just separate that out and they don't use any state funds for
Madam Chair, I just make two comments. One, many times cities or counties, even seen the federal government in certain cases, leverage their money against grant aid money, mm-hmm. so that they can have enough to groom. Second thing is, as with snowmobilers, ATV clubs, snowmobile clubs, these clubs that Representative Nelson has talked about are probably the biggest source of the funds of the ski passes. They're the ones that use them. They're the ones that are organized. In many cases, they're the ones that do the grooming, but they're the ones that pay the freight, too.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion on Senator Saxhog's bill? Would anyone else like to be heard on this bill? All right. Senator Saxhog, I think what we need to do is keep the bill here for our omnibus bill, just because we're doing all the sort of other fees and other funds in an omnibus bill, just to keep track of them. So, go ahead.
So, Madam Chair, I would move Senate File 2863 as amended be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
Number two. Sounds good.
Number two.
I think that motion works perfectly. If there's no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you all very much, and the meeting is adjourned.
Oh, I don't have to throw anything back, huh?